Now let's go to political perspectives.
Good morning. This is Tim Calvert, and with me today is Zahra Alkaby. Zahra, you want to say hello?
Good morning.
And we're here today to talk about something that you don't hear very much in the corporate media or even the alternative media very much. That's the plight and the situation of the displaced peoples of Iraq. And as we're all aware, these wars of occupation in the Middle East have continued right into the Obama administration. And listening to Joe and Abe this morning just before this show, it was clear that the frustration with Obama is growing among the progressives in this community and across the nation as we see that the true policies of the Obama administration appear to be continuations of the Bush regime, especially in regards to Iraq and Central Asia. And right now, my history has been one of anti-war activism and solidarity with people from around the world, especially the people who are bearing the brunt of U.S. imperial aggression. And, oh gosh, way back when the war started in 2003, I helped form a very small organization, the Portland Iraqi Solidarity Committee. And I thought before we get into the interview with Zahra about what's going on with Iraqi refugees, I would just give a brief rundown of kind of where we stand in terms of the anti-war activism as it's kind of unfolded over the last 6 years. Basically, as we're all aware, the United States invaded illegally Iraq in 2003 and has pretty much been occupying it ever since. And of course they also invaded Afghanistan and are also occupying Afghanistan and are threatening to attack Pakistan and in fact are threatening to attack Iran, unbelievably. I mean, so we have a situation where the public opinion before these wars and during these wars has largely always been against these wars. We have a situation where if you ask the typical Portlander or the typical American, really, on the streets, you'll hear that, no, they don't like this war. They don't like the war. They don't like the occupation. They don't like anything about it. And yet, year after year, we find ourselves interacting with politicians who go ahead and rubber stamp a criminal foreign policy. And this has been a real frustrating aspect for political activists because, you know, when you demonstrate on the streets, your basic reaction has been one of, well, you know, either apathy or vaguely positive and agreeing with you that we have to end the war, but somehow, as political activists, we've been unable to translate the majority opinion of the people into a political reality where we begin to withdraw out of the Middle East and treat the people in that region with respect. Far from it. We're going the other direction. Why? And this has been a question that the political activists have often shied away from because we don't like to call attention to who in the United States is lobbying for this war. Where is the impetus for this occupation and this war coming from? And unfortunately, we're able to identify at least one group that is very much pushing for occupation and oppression of the Arab and Central Asian peoples. And that actually comes in the form of our supposed ally in the Middle East, Israel, and the American Israeli Political Action Committee, APAC, which recently had a meeting here in Portland. And I just want to draw some attention to this because it ties into a lot of what's going on right now in Iraq, even, and Zahra will be talking about that to some extent, in particular about walls. But I want to draw people's attention to an excellent article written by Peter Miller in the current edition of the May 2009 Portland Alliance, which is a little tricky to track down, but worth tracking down in this moment because Peter Miller, who was one of the protesters out in front of the APAC meeting that happened on March 29th, at the Middleman Jewish Center was there and had people inside as well kind of reporting on what was actually going on. And it's worth just briefly going over that a little bit, because here we find where there is a group that is actively pushing for, in this case, aggressive action against Iran and complete support for Israel, even as they build settlements in the West Bank and savage the Gaza Strip and set the tone for how to interact with our Arab brothers and sisters. On March 29th, the keynote speaker, who was Peter Beinart, who is also an editor of the New Republic magazine, gave a keynote address urging action against Iran. And others spoke and talked about how the mere presence of all these different politicians at this meeting, and I have to say this meeting had a protest in front of it. There were all sorts of politicians inside of it, and yet there was no corporate media whatsoever there at the demonstrations. I just want to give a list of some of the prominent people who attended this AIPAC meeting, where they were calling for sanctions against Iran and uncritical support of Israeli policies. Governor Kulongowski, Secretary of State Kate Brown, Attorney General John Kroger, U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley, Oregon Senate Majority Leader Richard Devlin, Oregon Senate Republican Leader Ted Feroli, and other state senators and representatives, Portland City Commissioner Amanda Fritz, Democratic Party of Oregon Chairwoman Meredith Wood Smith, and the student body presidents of three major state universities, I believe that was U of O, OSU, and PSU, all attended this meeting. It was a clear illustration of the AIPAC strategy to lobby for support from the lowest to the highest levels of government. Many of the politicians did not like the prospect of facing 80 to 100 protesters outside and were apparently transported to the event, bypassing the main entrance. I bring these details up because we seem unable to influence the politicians nearly to the degree that AIPAC is able to influence the politicians. And I think that is a key weakness of the anti-war movement that we faced to this date, and explains a lot in terms of what kind of policies are going on in Iraq and Afghanistan and everywhere else. And it's an extremely frustrating situation. So anyway, this meeting, this AIPAC meeting, happened on March 29th. And on May 5th, the Oregon Senate passed a bill blocking investment in companies doing business in Iran. This is like this very belligerent bill that came before the Oregon Senate. And it was passed 27-3 with nary any debate. This is at the same time that the Oregon Peace groups had been lobbying heavily all the state legislators and the governor to try to get them to speak out against the Oregon Guard going to Afghanistan and Iraq, at the time when we were like trying to push our local representatives to represent us and the American nation in a way that represents the interests, the best interests of the American people. So in short, despite the public opinion, all of the demonstrations, letter writing, lobbying, elections, deaths of local people, Oregon National Guardsmen, soldiers, etc., federal and state politicians, both Democrats and Republicans, have lined up for endless wars and occupations against the Arab and Central Asian peoples. Therefore, the anti-war occupation activists face the grim reality that we are not winning this political fight. Apparently, we are unable to pressure our politicians at all. Other anti-democratic and even foreign groups appear to be able to create American foreign policy. What can anti-war activists do to be in solidarity with the victims of U.S. imperial aggression? One step is to join and help with Iraqi refugees who are now beginning to enter the United States, and help them both just materially and politically raise the awareness of the true cost of these occupations and wars against people who have done nothing to us, against people who have no interest in going to war with America, have no interest in, like, fighting America, and in fact have every interest in trading with the United States, admire the United States. It's such a tragedy that we're witnessing right now in the Middle East, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, where all the people there are looking for dignity and respect, and all they're getting are bullets and depleted uranium from us. So we've got an excellent opportunity here. Portland is blessed to have an amazing Iraqi activist in whose name Zahra Alkaby, who is tirelessly working to raise awareness of the millions of Iraqi refugees. And we're going to be talking about a few of the projects that she's been working on, including the Apology and Forgiveness Campaign, the Iraqi Food Festival, and just a little bit about her past, because I think her story illustrates the tragedy and the possibility of how we can, in fact, work with the people of Iraq and the Middle East in a real positive way. So I'd like to ask Zahra to just kind of give a brief sketch of her life in Baghdad and what brought you here to Portland.
Good morning, and thank you, Tim, for the introduction. I came to the United States in late August 2007, and I was sponsored by SIT, the School for International Training. I had attended the course for conflict transformation across cultures. Before I came to the United States, I was working with Iraqi refugees in Jordan for almost more than 7 years, and I was watching the people, my people, who came, you know, to Jordan and became displaced because they almost like lost everything in Iraq, and so they couldn't really stay in Iraq, and that's why they decided to go to Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, and to be displaced. When I left Iraq, I left Iraq when Saddam was ruling the country, and Iraq was under economic sanction. And so my life was really, you know, disturbed between the political situation in Iraq and watching my family facing a big pressure and persecution from Saddam regime. And I was really afraid that my children would be in the same situation. And then we have economic sanction, and it was like really bad and difficult for all the Iraqi children. And for more than 13 years of economic sanction, more than 1 million Iraqi children had been died because of the economic sanction. And they died because at that time we had lack of medication, and of course we don't have electricity because the first Gulf War, the United States, with cooperation of 34 countries around the world, they attacked Iraq in one night, and the first thing they did, they just attacked the power resources. And so on the same day, like the same night when they attacked us, I remember it was really heavy night and the explosions were everywhere. And after 10 minutes, we didn't have electricity. And so Iraq has been struggling with no electricity until this moment. And if you like consider all the children, the old people, people with asthma, with heart disease, and if you consider also the weather in Iraq, it's really hot country, and it could be like more than 100 degrees in Iraq when it's, you know, June, July, August, like we have a really hot summer, and all these children and old people, they die because there is no electricity in a house, so they can't really cope with the hot weather, and so they die. So I was facing like double pressure. When I was in Iraq, I was facing the pressure of being a member of the family that is against Saddam regime. And again, I'm facing the pressure of the economic sanction as any Iraqi citizen. So I decided to leave Iraq, and I went to Jordan, and I stayed in Jordan. I was trying to go to Germany to join my relatives and brothers, but it didn't work out anyway. I created a group to help Iraqi refugees when they came to Jordan, and Iraqi people in Jordan, they live in a very difficult situation. Even this moment, like Iraqi people in Jordan, they are not allowed to work, they are not allowed to get legal permanent residence, so they can't really do anything, and they are afraid to go, you know, to any, like, governmental office or school, to the hospital, because they know that they don't have the right to stay there. So I don't know, like, if you are against or if you are with the war. let us admit that the people, innocent people, children, women, old people, they have been paying the price for this ongoing war and occupation for more than 7 years now. And Iraqi people, Iraqi children, they are just, you know, tired. They just can't, you know, cope with this ongoing situation. And people here, they consider that the situation is okay, the war is over, and they are going to pull out the troops from Iraq. But how about the damage that happened to Iraqi people? The families who lost their family members, the families that lost their homes, the families that been in a prison, they've been tortured, they've been killed, kidnapped. You know, horrible stories. I have like tons of stories. If I want to tell them, I don't have enough time to say that, because as a peace activist and a founder of Save Refugees organization, I always in touch with my friends in Iraq, and they keep, you know, sending me stories and reports about the situation.
Can I jump in right now, Zahra, and because we want to get through a few different points here, and I want to ask you a little bit about what is the current situation in Baghdad, and in particular, could you describe the walls that the American soldiers are putting all throughout Baghdad?
Baghdad, as I know, and I don't know if anyone has any idea about the situation right now, in the media you hear that the situation is getting better and everything is okay, and people, you know, just live normal life. They go to their jobs, they go to school. But I have my own resource. I have my friends and my contacts, and so I always, you know, check with them. I say, what is the situation? A friend of mine, he was talking to me like a week ago, and he was saying to me, I've been trying so hard to go to Jordan and get out of Baghdad because it's became really horrible and people can't really stand the situation. Like at 8 o'clock in the evening, you are not able to go out of your house. And at 8 o'clock, like, you know, it's in Iraq, like it's the middle of the day. And you can't really go out. So it is not dark. It is not cold or something. The weather is super, you know, nice and perfect to go out. But people can't do that because the situation in the street, it's not safe, or the situation around you is not allowed you to go and do something outside after 8 o'clock. Because if you do, then you will be targeted from different groups and you don't know what will happen to you or to your family. In terms of electricity and pure water, there is no electricity still. There is no pure water, so people are digging in their garden. They are digging wells. And this is the situation in Baghdad. Baghdad is the capital of the most modern country among all Middle Eastern countries. Iraq was the most advanced country in the Middle East and the Arab countries. And now, if you go, like people went to the Stone Century in Baghdad. And this is the way that how they, like, really Iraqi lives nowadays. In terms of the security and the security barriers, and they say the security walls, I don't know, like, why they keep building these walls, and they keep separating people, and people are from different, you know, like, districts of Baghdad. They try to keep them in that specific location so you are not really allowed to move from your place and go to the other side of the town. And I saw like many pictures and many people told me about these walls and the checkpoints. So for instance, if you like just want to give a simple example to let people know what is the situation. If you are in downtown, and you want to go, let's say, to 20th Southeast. And this doesn't really take more than 5 minutes if you have a car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you are in Baghdad right now, if you want to get long, you know, for this distance, it will take you more than 2 hours or maybe more to go to that place, the place from downtown to Southeast, like 20th on Burnside, let's say. Because they have so many walls, they have so many checkpoints, and many groups, you don't know whether it's a political party or whether it's Americans, whether it's some extremists, they just block the street and have checkpoints and keep people, you know, in a long row, and you don't know, like, how long this will take. And if you try to go to turn and get the other direction, again, you will face another problem. And with the walls, it will be even more difficult because, like, they blocked many of the main roads and highways, so you really don't have the access to that road. And you had that option before. So it's really difficult and very disturbing situation with all the walls, barriers, and all the checkpoints. And they keep terrifying, like, people and keep people segregating, and I don't know, like, how long this will continue.
So, Zahra, we're actually even now running out of time again, but I wanted to move right away into the Apology and Forgiveness campaign. Can you and also talk about how to get in touch with SaveRefugees.org?
Yeah, I have a website, and that is SaveRefugees.org, and there is a page that says Apology and Forgiveness campaign. So if people want to go to the website and see about the campaign and get the sense what is the Apology and Forgiveness campaign about. And simply it's about writing letters of apology to Iraqi people, the people who lost everything in this war, and they paid really high price and for nothing. It's the connection between the people of the United States and the people in Iraq, and it is like a really good opportunity for Americans to talk to Iraqis and let them know that American people are concerned about the situation in Iraq, and they are not happy to see this, you know, great country get distracted just like that. And if we don't, like, if people don't talk to each other, then how can we really get the hatred level, and how can we reconcile the situation between Iraqis and Americans? If we don't talk to each other, if we don't have this communications, like a clear communications between people to people, then how do Iraqi think about Americans? And so I would like to have this healthy, positive relations between the two people, and I want to give the Americans the opportunity to talk to Iraqi people and write the letters and let them know what do you feel and how do you feel about the situation.
So, I just want to jump in that the feature of the Apology and Forgiveness campaign are these really striking postcards, feature artwork that's been done by various Iraqi refugees. Just very humanizing images that make one realize that, oh, these are in fact people. They are not enemies. They are not subhuman. They are our brothers and sisters. And this Apology and Forgiveness campaign is a really great way to kind of get in touch with that. And I love how the postcard begins with the word in both Arabic and English, I apologize. And it kind of sets the right tone for, you know, Americans that keep, like, rationalizing and justifying. And all these rationalizations and justifications are just painful self-deceptions about what's really happening here. I also wanted to have you talk a little bit about the Iraqi Food Festival. What's the goal there?
I would like to share the Iraqi culture, and I would like to let the people know, especially in Portland, what does it mean, like, for us Iraqi people to be in the United States and be away from the country, be away from the food that you like, be away from your friends and your people. And so it's like one way to share our culture with other people through food and let the people know about our food. And it's going to be a really nice event, and the Iraqi Food Festival, we are trying to talk to some people from the farmers market on Southeast Tark, and if we get the agreement, we will have it in June. But we didn't set up the date yet, so if anyone would like to come and join the Iraqi Food Festival, we will be happy to have all Americans with us and to experience the Iraqi food. And we will have so many Iraqi refugees who came recently to Portland. And each family will make a dish and will come to that event. And we don't know, as I said, yet whether we will have it on the farmers market on Southeast Park or we will have it on Mount Tabor Park. We are in a process to find out, you know, which location will be working better for us.
I just want to say that as a person who's got to sample a little bit of the Iraqi food, especially from Zahra herself, who's an excellent cook, Iraqi food is a fascinating blend of kind of Middle Eastern and Indian and Asian. And just yet another unique, beautiful human example of great cuisine, and another reason why we should in fact be just celebrating them instead of occupying.
Exactly. I just wanted to introduce the Iraqi refugees to this new community and let Americans welcome Iraqi refugees and let them know that they are, you know, their friends, and they can socialize with them and get easy. And it will be really a nice chance to have both Iraqi refugees and American people in that event. We can all celebrate together and enjoy our food and our culture, rather than to keep, you know, hating each other and don't look to each other, don't talk, don't know about us, we don't know about you. We just want to destroy the barriers that our governments are trying to build against people.
And I think we're just about done. And I just wanted to say that, you know, for all the people out there who are kind of resting easy that Obama is now in charge and hopefully this is going to mean a difference, I think we really need to keep the pressure up. We need to be asking all the people who want to sign up for the military to not sign up for the military. We want to keep asking the Oregon Guardsmen who are about to go to Iraq and Afghanistan to not follow illegal orders. Start questioning these policies that are oppressing the people of Iraq, and start looking for policies that are going to increase the solidarity, increase the understanding, and increase the forgiveness across the region. There is no reason to hate the Arab people, and every reason to embrace them.
Thank you, Tim.